Hey everyone, it's the Kung Fu Genius, aka Alex Richter, and you can follow me at The Kung Fu Genius. I got great news for KFG fans. For a limited time, you can get $5 off any order of $20 or more by using the code KFG5OFF at citywt.com. You can use this code for books, training equipment, t-shirts, and apparel. That code is KFG5OFF, and you can use that $5 off for any order of $20 or more at citywt.com. And that also includes using it towards my new book, The 15 Chi Sao Fundamentals, which just arrived and is still available while supplies last. The response to the pre-order was amazing, and we only have a few left, so get yours now. And you can always support this channel and podcast in simple ways, like subscribe to the channel, like the video, turn on notifications, and rate it wherever you get this podcast. And with that, let's get started.
All right, peeps, on today's episode of The Kung Fu Genius, the genius will be chatting with his good friend, a veteran of Hong Kong action and former member of Sammo Hung's stunt team, Bobby Samuels. Lots of stunts, lots of action, and lots of dude work with Sammo Hung. Let's get to it.
He is unstoppable, unbeatable, unbelievable. He's Alex Richter, the Kung Fu Genius.
And every day, I practice martial arts. Watch out.
Word is, I'm a Kung Fu Genius. Practice all day like a genius.
Hey, Bobby, man, it's good to see you. How you doing?
Hey, Alex, what's up, brother? How you doing?
Well, this is the first time I've seen you. I mean, I can't really say face-to-face, but, you know, since this whole pandemic thing happened, how have you been holding up through this whole thing?
Oh, man, it's been difficult, but, you know, we're managing to hang in there, you know. Recently just started getting back into production, but we were dry for a while there because of the pandemic.
You mentioned some kind of Shaw Brothers theme stuff. Like, I mean, you don't have to give too much away, but, like, yeah, what's that all about?
An actual throwback to the old Shaw Brother days. Basically, we've got a guy watch. He's a comic book aficionado and Kung Fu film fan. He's actually watching TV one night and Fists and Guts, and he puts the VR goggles on, falls asleep, and he reimagines Fists and Guts according to his ethnicity. We'll just say that.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
It's a complete throwback to Shaw. You'll enjoy it.
For, you know, my longtime listeners, they've definitely heard our interview before, but there's probably a bunch of people here on the Kung Fu Genius channel who don't know you or maybe haven't heard too much about you. I want people to know just how crazy you are. So basically, at one point in your life, you bought a one-way ticket to go to Hong Kong. And why don't you let people know the story about how you went there and how you made such a crazy decision in your life?
Yeah, I've always wanted to do Kung Fu movies and actually work with the people from Shaw Brothers and Golden Harvest. And I knew that I couldn't afford to fly, you know. So I said, you know what, I'll get a job with the airlines. And I got a job with U.S. Airway because I knew you could fly with a discount ticket. So for about 4 or 5 years on my vacation, I just kept going back and forth to Asia until I finally met the right person. But yeah. Sometimes you just got to think out of the box to get where you need to go.
So from what I understand from, you know, what I know about you and what I've read, you basically go to Hong Kong. You don't really have a plan. You kind of walk around and you decide to go to Shaw Studios of all places. How were you greeted when you got to Shaw Brothers Studios?
Oh, wow. They were like, wow, who's this black guy at the front gate, you know? And I'm like, please, I just want to make movies, you know, and can I come in? Can I audition anything? But the studios were kind of closed. They were labeled mostly for TVB at that time, and small productions. So I left with my tail wagging, you know, then I went to Golden Harvest as well. It wasn't until I met Chu Chi Ling. Most of you may remember him from Kung Fu Hustle. He in turn, you know, took me under his wing and, He became my manager in Hong Kong to help me get movie roles for about 3 years. So he actually got me through the gate one time. So that was pretty cool. I got a chance to tour the studios and Golden Harvest. And yeah, it was a good feeling. But it wasn't until I started working for Sammo that I actually got an opportunity to work at Shaw Brothers and Golden Harvest. So it's awesome.
So the Golden Harvest Studios, that's the old Hammer Hill Road location, I presume. That's kind of where they've always been, right?
That's correct. Yep. Jackie had his offices there on the side, Golden Way. You know, Mitsubishi was a big sponsor of Jackie at that time. So all those prototype cars that he had, you know, the one that drives underwater, that was on the Golden Harvest lot. So yeah, it was pretty cool, man. And that particular time, the first time I met Jackie was with Chuchi Ling. And that was on the set of Armor of God 2. So Jackie took a liking to me there, and he took Chuchi Ling and myself to dinner, and you know, we just hung out with him all day while he was actually filming some clips for Armor of God on the Golden Harvest lot. So yeah, it was pretty cool to see the master at work.
So in the lore of Golden Harvest, you know, Jackie Chan took over Bruce's old office at the studios. Now there's a you know, rumor that other actors didn't want to take Bruce Lee's old office because it was supposedly haunted, but Jackie, you know, didn't care, wasn't superstitious. Was he still in that little office at that time?
He was still in there. Actually, you know, he kept that office, but he also opened up the Golden Way film group, which was off to another part of Golden Harvest, like a separate lot. But you can go back and forth. I mean, it was incredible. Every day I'd see Wu Ma, God rest his soul.
Wow.
He was there. Shek Tien, Junmen Wai Sin Sang, Raymond Chow. He kept coming back and forth, you know. My buddy Jeff Falcon, he was under contract at that time. So he was a stable at Golden Harvest too at that time.
So yeah, so my two buddies who worked in Hong Kong films are obviously you and Vincent Lin. And, you know, you guys were making movies around the same time in Hong Kong, but apparently your paths never crossed. So you had not met Vincent, or you guys didn't kind of meet during that time. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. Vince was very prolific in Hong Kong. He was a model, a film actor, right along the lines of Cynthia Rothrock, very well known. However, I never had an opportunity to meet him nor work with him in Asia. It wasn't until I came back in 97 and I had a chance to do a film called Ultimate Master. Was it Ultimate Master? No, Blazing with Fat Joe. And I saw his headshot come across the desk. I was like, yo, that's Vincent Lin. I'd love to have him for the film. So we called him. He came over. You know, him and I were like, wow, this is kind of crazy. You know, we were both in Hong Kong and we never met. And that was 1997. And we've been best friends and brothers since then.
That's really amazing. So you go to Hong Kong and you meet Chuchi Ling. And Chuchi Ling, obviously, is a veteran of Hong Kong films. He was in some really fantastic movies. He was in Snake in the Eagle's Shadow. He was also in those old seasonal instructional videos where the Tiger and Crane.
When Yuen Wah was in the front where they did the intro and everything.
Yeah.
And also, what's that? Bruce Lee, the Man in the Myth. I think it was.
Yeah, and of course, nowadays, everyone knows him from Kung Fu Hustle, and he was just absolutely fantastic in that.
Exactly. And I brought him here to the United States for Made in Chinatown.
Okay, so you have Chu Sifu essentially acting as your manager. You eventually get introduced to people like Sammo Hung and other actors and other kind of heavies in the Hong Kong industry. What was your first foray, or how did you first get into or introduced to your first film or doing your first film?
Well, I kept hitting a couple of roadblocks, and that was kind of, you know, demoralizing. Actually, I went out for King of the Kickboxers up against Billy Blanks. We both did that, and Billy Blanks got the role, so that was a downer. So then I did a film called Manhattan Midnight with Shek Tien, and they ended up cutting my footage from there. And then I did She Shoots Straight with Yuen Biao and Goh Lai Hong. But the only clip that they left of me in the film is on a computer screen when Goh Lai Hong goes to look for the bad guy. My image comes up. So the whole scene that I shot was just cut. So I was starting to get demoralized, you know, but slowly but surely, you know, once I met Sammo, everything changed. And that happened one night when I was at the Nikko Hotel, and I went to the bathroom. And in the bathroom, Chang Hongyit, Paul Chang, was in there. And he says, like, there's a black guy doing it in Hong Kong, you know? And then I started speaking some Chinese to him, and he was shocked. He's like, what? And I said, yeah, well, I'm trying to get in the movies and everything. You know, at the time, Chuchi Ling was still continually trying to help me, but he really wasn't getting me the type of roles that I needed or anything like that. So Paul said, you know, later that night, you know, meet me at such and such hotel, and I'll introduce you to some people. Well, that night I met him at the Japanese hotel, and he walks in with Sammo and Chen Kun Tai and David Chang, Chang Dawei. And I'm like, just floored right there, just seeing the three of them. So I sit down and I have a bunch of photos, and I show Sammo, and he's like, I'm looking at the photos. He said, here. He's looking at him. He just, like, he's not interested. He says, well, can you fight? I said, yeah. He said, well, can you fight four or five guys? I said, well, I'm not you, but, you know, I can handle myself. He said, okay, cool. And he sat for a little while longer talking, and then he just left. So I didn't know if I made a good impression on him or not, but Chen Kuntai and the rest of us, we all sat, and then we went to go eat dinner. About an hour into the dinner, the phone rings, and Paul answers it, and it's Sammo. And Sammo's like, I'm going to change the ending of one of my films that I'm doing, Hong Fuk Chai Team, which is Gambling Ghost, and I'm going to use you as a bad guy. And I was like, whoa, finally, the opportunity that I've been waiting for, you know? So with that, also, it's ironic that, you know, the film that really had the most indelible impression on me was Five Fingers of Death with Lo Lay. And the first film that I did, Gambling Ghost, was with Lo Lay. And James Tin from Fist of Fury, Mong Hoi, the little boy from Enter the Dragon with Bruce Laps. It was just, you know, it was incredible, you know? And I got to meet my other Kung Fu Si Hing brother, Colin Chow, Nai Sing.
So suddenly you go from not even sure you're going to get into anything, and then you're in the deepest of waters in terms of Hong Kong action cinema.
I even went out for, I was casted for for The Quest with Van Damme. Had my contract, everything was ready to go. But then they casted Winston Ellis, you know? I was like, wow, I lost to Billy Blanks, now I'm losing to Winston Ellis, you know? I guess because I'm not a big guy or whatever, I don't know. But, you know, both of those brothers, they're such tremendous men, you know, and they have good spirits. And I wasn't upset at all, you know? The better man got the job, because Winston is a brilliant actor, and he's one of my best friends.
You are now going to shoot this final fight scene in Gambling Ghost with Sammo Hung. This is, I think, around 1991. You have Sammo, in my opinion, at that time, at the peak of his prowess as a choreographer and also still physically capable of doing all these things. Now, you have to have a fight scene with him. Now, what I want to know is, how much preparation went into a fight scene like that? Like, is it something where these things are choreographed for a while? Are you expected to just pick it up very quickly and then go and do it? Obviously, Sammo Hung is known as a taskmaster, and he expects excellence from everyone around him. I'm sure it was quite nerve-wracking. How does a fight scene like that get prepared before you shoot it?
So I was, and I'll kid you not, I was very starstruck that evening, because everywhere I looked, it was an all-star cast, and everyone that I grew up admiring was there. There was a couple of scenes where I had some problems during some of the action. Actually, it was a 16-punch combination, and Colin Chow kept trying to help me throughout the night with the combination. And Sammo, he never really got mad. It took me from about, let's say, 12 midnight till 5 a.m. in the morning just to get this sequence of punches down. And I just kept saying, oh, I'm never going to work in Hong Kong again. It's over. You know, it's my first time out the bat, and it's just not going to work. But finally, I got it together. Sammo never got mad. And I'll tell you, just to cut forward real quick, I asked him years later when I lived with him why he never got mad that night. And he said he never got mad because I never quit. I kept trying. So that was a testament to how he was as a person. I did Gambling Ghost, and I finished early. I finished a week early. The fight scene took about a week to film complete. So the producers came to me and said, you know, we finished early. Are you willing to kind of forfeit some of the cash type thing? And I said, well, I'll forfeit the money if you let me speak to Sammo. So I go to Sammo and I said, look, the producers owe me X amount of money. I said, I'm willing to give that cash up if you just allow me an opportunity to work with you again in the future. And he said, you're willing to give up the money, $5,000, in order just to work with me again? I said, absolutely, 100%. So he was like, deal. So I gave up the money. And it was probably the best decision that I ever made, because about a year later, I get a call from Sammo, and he's like, I'm coming to New York, and I'm going to buy a home in Old Westbury, New York. So he wanted me to meet him at the airport. From there, it was him, Yun Biao, Goh Lai Hong, and a couple other people. And we set him up in Old Westbury, New York. We were horsebound. I'll never forget it that day. It was me, Sammo, and Yun Biao. We were all horseback riding. And then Sammo was like, I need a screen name for you. And I'm like, well, okay. What? He was like, and then Yun Biao was like, I got it. We're calling Bobby Long. And I was like, whatever. And it's like Bobby the Dragon, you know? And from that point on, that's where the moniker came in, Bobby Long. Sammo named me that.
What an incredible story. And wow, how surreal it is just to hear you talk about riding horseback in upstate New York with Sammo Hung and Yuen Biu. That's really incredible.
It was crazy, man. It's like a dream come true, you know? It really was. And then I'll say after the old Westbury, about I go back to work because I was still actually working for US Air. I went back to work for US Air after I left from doing Gambling Ghost because really nothing was happening. At that time, he stayed in old Westbury for a couple of months and he went back to Hong Kong. After he goes back to Hong Kong, I get a letter from my job about 5 months after that saying, you know, they're going to lay me off. So I called him and I was like, you know, I don't really have a job anymore in America. He was like, nope, get on the plane, come out. So I got on the plane. I got a one-way ticket because I knew that, you know, if I had a round trip ticket, this had to be my shot. If I had a round trip ticket and it got hard, then I would just probably cash it in and come back home. I wanted to put myself in a situation where I had to stay there until I made a living in order to return. So when I got there, Sammo met me at the airport and he took me to the immigration department and he put me on file as his English instructor. So that got around the loophole of Americans only allowed to stay in the country for a certain amount of days and with the work visas issues. Finally, and it's funny because every now and then, I think every 3 or 4 months, I had to go to the immigration department. I would actually just walk in there and the immigration official would say, oh, we saw you on television last night. Stamp, see ya. Tell Sammo we said hi. So I was like, wow, this is pretty cool, you know?
So you were officially his English teacher. Yeah, I mean, things in Hong Kong seem to work like that. They're, you know, on one hand, very efficient. On the other hand, it seems, yeah, if you also know someone, they can be even more efficient. And how funny is that, that they would see you on TV and know exactly what the deal is and stamp your passport anyway?
And they knew that, you know, but again, he's Sammo. He's, you know, he's a respected figure in Hong Kong. So
your first credit there is for Gambling Ghosts. And then after that, you know, the first acting credit you have after that is Don't Give a Damn. You've obviously done some films in between, but you're listed as the black bodyguard in Super Cops. Are we talking about Jackie Chan's Super Cop? Is that a real thing? I don't remember seeing you in there.
We are talking about that.
So are you actually in that movie or is that one of those IMDb flubs?
That's one of those things where I have no idea where it came from.
That's funny. I recently chatted with Vincent as well, and we went through his IMDb, and there were a bunch of movies on there that he had no idea and had absolutely no part of.
In fact, the photo of the black guy that they show for Supercop on Hong Kong database, it's not even me. I'm looking at the guy. He's like, I'm like, wow, how could they mistake that for me, you know? But I will say this, though. When we did do Gambling Ghost, when we did do Don't Give a Damn, I was actually casted for Rumble in the Bronx. So Sammo calls me into the office and he says, Jackie wants to use you in Rumble in the Bronx. I told him, yes, no problem. So now I'm just excited. You know, I'm like, my God, I can't believe this. I've worked with Sammo. Now I'm getting ready to work for Jackie Chan. So I'm excited. I'm go home. I go to pack my bags and everything. All of a sudden, the next day at the office, Sammo calls me in and he goes, yeah, let me talk to you. I'm like, what? He's like, oh yeah, Jackie pissed me off. You're not doing a movie. So, like, I'm like, okay, you're right. Yeah. But, you know, because I live with Sammo in his home, you know, I got to follow what, you know, that's how it works in Chinese culture. I follow Hung Gaban. In order to work for other film directors, I need permission, you know, because I'm under contract with his company. So, you know, I was like, but then he said, you know, we're going to do our own movie. And it was Momin Bay, Don't Give a Damn. He was that mad. So where he actually featured me as the lead in Don't Give a Damn, the lead villain. So the irony of it is that they were both released on the same day in Kowloon City at the theater. So they were kind of battling each other at the box office. One was Rumble in the Bronx and the other was Don't Give a Damn. So it was kind of bittersweet with me going into the actual premiere of my movie, looking at Jackie's movie saying, I could have had that one too, you know. But, you know, they're brothers. They go through these things, you know, ups and downs. They've been, you know, dedicated to each other since children. So it's like any other brother relationship. Sometimes there's tension, sometimes there's not.
Yeah, I think for people with a traditional Chinese martial arts background, especially those who've learned from Chinese Sifu, kind of understand that whole dynamic between the Hung Gaban, you know, you having to be loyal to them versus also having the opportunity to work elsewhere, whereas maybe people who come from actors from the Western world might have a harder time understanding that whole dynamic.
I did luck up on the third try because he said my children's godfather wants to use you and your stunt team in his new feature. And that was a ripoff of Speed. That was the Red Wolf, and that was Yuen Woo Ping. So I was like, oh, yes, you know? So that was awesome. I got to work with Yuen Woo Ping.
It paid off in the end.
It did.
So you once told me a story, while you were house-sitting for Sammo, that you came across some VHS tapes there. I would like for you to maybe talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I stayed in the room with his son, Timmy. And like in the mornings, he said, if you get up, you know, get yourself something to eat. And I'm looking at the wall and there's hundreds and hundreds of VCR tapes. And I'm like, okay, wow. So I got up in the morning, I started looking on the shelves and I could see different things. And I'm just grabbing and putting it in the machine. And I'm looking at all these behind the scenes that he had been documenting from the different films that he did. And finally, I saw one that said Enter the Dragon. So I actually put it in there, and it was tons of footage of Sammo and Bruce behind the scenes. And when he woke up, you know, he came in there, he's like, oh, you see, you found it. I said, yeah. I said, man, this is incredible. I said, this is a gold mine here. He's like, but I'm not out to profit from it, you know. He said, it's my personal memories. He's like, you know, he had a great relationship with Bruce, and he never really wanted to capitalize on profiting off of it, so. I'm sure he's transferred that footage to DVD by now. This, you know, VCR tapes are a thing of the past.
Wow, that's really incredible. When it comes to Bruce Lee fans, you know, we go crazy for every little scrap of new footage we get. I think about a year ago or so, there was that footage release from the TV studio there in California where he's just riding the bike with the suspenders on and he just talks, I don't know, for 45 seconds and people lost their minds over that. Can you imagine the gold mine or how much that would be worth to get that footage out there of Bruce and Sammo on the set of Enter the Dragon? Really incredible.
Exactly.
So you also told me a story about the first time Bruce Lee and Sammo Hung met, and that story having a lot to do with why Sammo Hung respected Bruce Lee so much, and just you thought maybe, yeah, you might want to recount that story for our listeners.
Sure. Sammo said that, you know, at the time he was doing films in Korea and Thailand, and he was a pretty big action director, and he knew Bruce Lee was pretty big as well, you know, Golden Harvest is cash cow. So he said, Bruce walked into his office one day while he was at Golden Harvest, and he's like, yeah, how you doing, man? He's like, yeah, I hear you can fight. He said, yeah, I hear you can fight. He was like, okay. He said, well, let's test it out, right? He said, because I actually asked him, I said, was Bruce really that fast? And he told me, he said, before he could actually move to strike at Bruce Lee, he said Bruce Lee had hit him four times before he could even move. He said, by far, he was the fastest man he had ever seen. So, yeah, it is true. Bruce was definitely beyond his years.
Yeah, what an incredible story. And can you imagine if there was footage that existed of that encounter, what that would be worth? That's really incredible. So one of your accomplishments is that you are the only African-American to be inducted into the Hong Kong Stuntman Association. And that wasn't that easy. Apparently, you have to get signed off by a number of Hong Kong action directors. They have to sign your application. And Sammo was a bit unwilling to do that at first, but you had apparently made a deal with them that if you had accomplished what you said you were going to do, that they had to sign you off. Can you let us know a little bit about that? That's always one of my favorite Bobby Samuel stories.
Yeah, so it was in Don't Give a Damn, and it was a scene where I come out of the police station, and it's a long stunt where I have to come out of the burning building, run across a yard, 100-yard dash, leap over a fence, land on an embankment, run into the middle of the highway, and leap into the back of a moving vehicle, all while oncoming traffic is coming. They never locked the street up or anything. So they were preparing actually Nye Sing to do a stunt double for me for that scene. And I kept saying, nah, I can do it. And Sam was like, Americans can't do that kind of action. And I'm like, no, give me a chance. And Lau Ka Leung's brother, Lau Ka Wing, was there. And he said, you know, let him try if he wants to try it, you know. Ching Ka Lok was there, Yuen Biao, and Cho Wing. And they were all like, you know, we'll see if he can do it, right? So I gear up, and then Sam was like, look, if you can pull this off and not embarrass me in one take, he's like, I'll sign for you to be a Hong Kong Stuntman Association. I'm like, really? So that was all the motivation I need, you know. So He called action eBay. And once he said action, I ran out the burning building, crossed the yard, hit the fence, landed bang, boom, in the truck, boom. I got out and I'm standing there like, you know, hey. And they're all, it's silence, like crickets, you know? And I started seeing money being floated back and forth between them. So they actually bet that I couldn't do it, you know? But I went in there with four signatures to become a Hong Kong stuntman. Samo, Chingalo, Lau Ka Wing, and Yun Biao.
That is a really funny story. And the fact that they were betting on it too is also very typical Hong Kong Chinese. So you mentioned Lau Ka Wing, and I always felt that Lau Ka Wing was always slightly cast under the shadow of his brother, Lau Ka Leung. What was he like as a person? I mean, I've obviously seen many of his movies. He's fantastic in terms of action choreography, but you know, what was he like? Because not that much is known about him.
Oh, he's a brilliant man. We all hung out because I was a member of the Asia Sports Stars Association. It was me, Samo, Eric Chang, pretty much anybody who's anybody in Hong Kong. And we would all play soccer together, Lau Ka Wing, myself and Leung Kai Yan and Cho Wing. Cho Wing had the most powerful soccer kick I've ever seen in my life, but you can see that through how he handles his leg work. But he was a brilliant guy. He was one of the action directors for Don't Give a Damn as well. We had a total of seven action directors to help create the action for Don't Give a Damn. So yeah, he's a brilliant guy. And just to gain knowledge from him on set was just amazing.
Was there anyone where you felt really starstruck when you met them?
I'd have to say it was actually three women. And number one was Lily Lee. She used to be Paul Chang's girlfriend, and you know, she's a staple from the early Shaw Brothers, and the Crane mother from Executioners. I geeked the minute I saw her. I had dinner with her and David Chang. The second one was Maggie Chow. I met her at Planet Hollywood, and she was like, wow, it's interesting to have a black guy over here working in Hong Kong. You know, she was such a classic, beautiful woman. And the woman I loved tremendously, who treated me with just mad respect, Mo Ying Fong, Anita Moy. I had the pleasure of spending time with her before she passed. Actually, I had dinner with her and Leslie Cheung. They were both good friends of mine.
Wow, two of the biggest legends, Anita Moy and Leslie Cheung. You know, I still can't watch a Leslie Cheung film without still feeling how sad and unfortunate it is that he's not with us anymore, as with Anita Moy as well.
A truly remarkable man. Yep.
In a similar way, one of my starstruck moments was when I had the chance to meet your mentor, Sammo Hung, in Hong Kong in 1996. That was the year I graduated from high school. My parents gifted me a trip to Hong Kong for my high school graduation. Apparently, they were not that sure I was going to graduate. So that was kind of a big deal that I graduated high school. And yeah, totally by chance, Sammo Hung was in the hotel that I was staying at. Got up one morning, was having my breakfast, and Sammo Hung and his wife Mina walks in, and I was completely starstruck, because if you had asked me 10 minutes before who is the one Hong Kong film actor that you would like to meet over anyone, I would have picked Sammo Hung over all the other ones, Jackie Chan, Jet Li. Yeah, and another crazy starstruck moment I had with a Hong Kong film actor I actually shared with you, and that was the time we both went to Angela Mao's restaurant and met her. I just remember that was really incredible, and it was super cool to be able to share that moment.
And who would have thought a gem, an icon, is here in New York City, you know, humbly just, you know, doing her business. It was such an honor, you know. And she's good friends with Lu Fong. Their families know each other in Taiwan. So that was another great moment.
So obviously one of the big differences between Western action movies and Hong Kong action films, especially in the older days, is the pacing and the timing and the speed. And I want to talk a little bit about how those fight scenes were put together. Were these rehearsed way in advance? Is it done more organically? Is the fight choreographer constantly throwing new stuff and coming up with new ideas? What's the process in which a fight scene, at least the ones in the films you've worked on, was created in?
Well, a lot of the Hong Kong action is not actually done like they do here in America, where they storyboard everything and, you know, stick figures and things of that nature. Most of them are dedicated lifelong martial artists, and some of them who aren't, they're able to actually do the moves as if they were, like Leung Kai Yan, you know, who never studied Kung Fu.
Yeah, most people think he's actually a real Wing Chun practitioner because of that film Warriors 2.
And you can see that, you know, he's a natural with it.
I think Hong Kong stunt directors have this incredible talent to turn non-martial artists and make them look like they know something, like Chow Yun-fat from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and Andy Lau, lots of examples.
And most of the time when they design a scene, the action directors will come on, they already have in their head exactly how they want to lay it out. And they'll take their assistants and they'll kind of lay the groundwork for the action. So you'll see them designing it. And you as an actor just pay attention to understand where you might have some problems at. The tempo is a little bit quicker than America. And also the days are longer, 16, 17 hour days. And the combinations sometimes are 15, 20 combinations at a time that you have to memorize. Most of the time, the fighting multiple people, that can be a challenge to most Americans when they fight in Hong Kong style fighting. But over the years, since Hong Kong action has now integrated into the American film industry, you can clearly see that part of the repertoire now for American cinema is wire work and understanding the dynamics of Hong Kong action. So pretty much no matter what it is today, be it physical martial arts or even gunplay, it all has a correlation to the early 80s and 90s of Hong Kong cinema when the first stable of American-led film directors came back to Hong Kong and put their magic down. I was very fortunate to actually, and I sit back and I think, you know, about my career and how some of the things that began, you know, I was actually in the editing room with John Woo when he was actually editing A Better Tomorrow, and I was picking his brain, and this was when he was with Choi Hark at the Film Workshop, a very popular film group during the 80s with YC Lee and Shek Tien, Carl Maka. They were all actors that and directors that worked there. But just to have an opportunity to see the master at work, John Woo, that was incredible. That was incredible. And actually picking Choi Hark's brain as well, you know, such a nice guy and his wife, Natsa Shi. So yeah, I've been very fortunate to have been around, you know, since the early age of Hong Kong cinema.
Now, obviously, most of the films you did were more contemporary action films. Wire work is definitely a staple of Hong Kong films, although more often than not for the more traditional costume-based kung fu movies. Did you do any wire work, even like the subtle wire work where they kind of, you know, pull someone's leg when they get hit? Did you do any of that?
So Gambling Ghosts, no wire work. Don't Give a Damn, minimal wire work. And that really was when Nai Sing choked me out at the end. They actually had him on a wire to get on the top of the back of my neck and actually spin around like he did. That was relatively uncomfortable to have someone put something around your neck and then just start spinning, you know, until it tightens up. So yeah, it can be difficult sometimes.
Yeah, the reason I wanted to bring up the wires is because obviously you probably heard this story too. Our good friend Vincent has some horror stories about wires and you know, pulling him off of wires and only estimating that he's going to go out, I don't know, 10, 20 feet. But with four dudes pulling, he was probably going to go out a little further and how these things were, didn't maybe have the best safety protocols.
It's an approximation. It's not an exact science. That's for certain. I mean, they've managed to refine it since then. But the early days, oh, no, you got hurt.
So in those films that you made, especially Gambling Ghost and Don't Give a Damn, I know pretty much from the beginning of Hong Kong cinema, they shot those films without sound because sound recording was a bit of an issue. Plus, many of those films were later dubbed anyway for the Mandarin-speaking audience. Were the films that you shot at that time with Sammo Hung, were those shot with sound or were they still shot without sound?
No, they were actually shot without sound. I remember doing Don't Give a Damn and actually having to actually go to the studio and dub all of my voice. And I'm sitting there, I'm looking at the gentleman over there in the sandbox making hoarse sounds and clapping here. And I'm like, wow, this is incredible. This is really old school, you know? And I'm looking at my image up on screen, and every time my image came in, I hit the button and put my voice in. Yeah, so very rudimentary back in the day.
Wow, so you did your own Cantonese dubbing for your voice.
Yes, I did. I was fortunate though to, you know, have it written out in Chinese, so I was able to actually speak, you know, and understand what was going on.
What did they use to actually make those impact hit sounds? I was always curious because those are always a bit over the top.
Almost like you, like two pairs of slippers, and they were just like clapping them together. Pop, 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 you know? And just a myriad of other things that they would just use, you know? It's incredible.
Yeah, at that point in the Hong Kong film industry, those guys were, you know, old veterans, and they knew how to make the sounds, and they've been doing that for a long time.
Tons of cigarette smoke in there. They've been in there for a week and a half, you know.
Did you ever get injured in any of those fight scenes you did?
I had my teeth knocked out a couple times. What else? A couple sprained ribs. My ass bone got bruised pretty bad. Ruptured ankle. First day on set of Don't Give a Damn. I step into the warehouse because there was a big gun battle. And as soon as I stepped into the warehouse, my ankle busted and it blew up the size of an elephant. And I had action to do that day. So I didn't know what I was going to do. But then Samuel was like, I need you to have a high pain tolerance today. And I'm like, oh my God. So they went and got me some ACE bandages. And I mean, they wrapped the ankle up. I had on combat boots. So I laced them all the way up to the top. I tied it super tight, so that it would be a brace, and I just went to work that day with a messed up ankle. But you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, such a different way of looking at shooting films. It's like, yep, you're injured, but sorry, you're going to have to lace that up, and we're going to have to do it anyway.
Yeah, he knocked my tooth out, and I'm like, my God, you know, I'm bleeding. And he's like, oh, he comes over, he's like, Bobby, you okay? I'm like, no, man, you knocked my tooth out, dude. He's like, oh, it's okay, sorry. We need real. I'm like, okay. And then he said, get Bobby some water. So he gave him some water. He said, okay. He said, okay, put tooth in your pocket. Let's go back to work. I'm like, what, dude? You know, in America, I'm looking for an oral surgeon, you know, but not in Hong Kong.
Just put the tooth back in your pocket and let's get going. So I had another moment, surreal moment, I suppose. A number of years ago, I had the chance to meet Shaw Brothers legend from The Venoms, Law Mong, who's a mutual friend of both of ours. And I met him first. I did an interview with him, which I also have on my Kung Fu Genius channel. And then years later, I had a chance to see him again, but this time for his birthday with you in Los Angeles. And that was a really amazing time getting to see the two of you together. And, you know, one of those weird moments where I almost felt that I had to pinch myself.
You know, that's really one of the ironies. It's almost akin to Vincent Lin. Like, I saw him one time in Hong Kong at the Asia Sports Association. He was actually sitting directly in front of me. Never looked back at me, but I was just staring and peeking at him, right? Never opened my mouth to him at all. And years later, I come back to America and I'm directing music videos with Nick Quested. And all of a sudden, Nick's like, you know, I got this project, let's bring some of the Hong Kong guys. And we knew Jeannie Liu, and Jeannie Liu knew Lo Mong, so she made a phone call. And that was the first time I actually met him, where he actually worked with me on a big multi-million dollar video with Drew Hill in London, England. So we flew Sifu Lo Meng and one of his assistants into England. We stayed there for a month, and we designed this huge martial arts music video for the group Drew Hill. At the time, Rush Hour was very popular, so they were on top of the game. So that was actually the first time I got to work with him. And then another opportunity came, and then we worked with him again. Then another opportunity came. We brought him here to Philadelphia. He received an accommodation from the mayor. It was Lo Mong Day in the city of Philadelphia. And subsequently then, I ended up hiring him to do my first big American film, Made in Chinatown. So yeah, I never met him in Hong Kong, but we've worked multiple times around the world outside of Hong Kong.
Now that I think about it, actually a number of my surreal moments, you were a part of them, because during that trip in Los Angeles, to Los Angeles, where we were celebrating Lo Mong's birthday, good friend of mine, Brian LaRota, whom I introduced you to.
I owe you for that. I owe you for that, brother. I mean that. You know, actually, Brian and I speak every other day. So
that's amazing.
I really do appreciate what you did for me on that.
We got to meet someone else. We got to meet Johnny Gill, of all people.
That was incredible, wasn't it? I'm like, wow.
Yeah, and it was funny. My wife, who grew up in Hong Kong, she has, you know, absolutely no idea who Johnny Gill is. But when he comes in, I totally freak out. I whisper to her, "Hey, that's Johnny Gill." And she's like, "Yo, who the hell is that?" And it's like, "How dare you? How dare you not know that?"
I was geeking too. I was geeking too. But hats off to Bryant, man. He treated us tremendous. You know,
absolutely.
He threw that private party for Sifu Lo Mang in Beverly Hills, and that was amazing.
So you mentioned Made in Chinatown, this film that you made, which also stars Lo Sifu. So how can people find that film? How can people watch it?
Right now, the film is with Robert Adaman Associates. He's a big agent in New York City. He represents Tony Darrow and Vinny Pastora. He has the film right now. So right now, it's being shot with Fox Searchlight, Sony Pictures. So we'll have a deal very shortly in that respect. But in the meantime, though, we've been doing some film festivals. We've garnered about 9 or 10 awards, Best Actor, Best Action, Audience Choice Award. We sold out in some private screenings, so yeah, we're just waiting for the big one to come.
Yeah, and of course now with the whole pandemic, this seems like ages ago, but this was probably just about a year and a half ago. You did something, a short with Art School Dropouts called Yes Auntie, and I went to go see it at the Museum of the Moving Image. Our mutual friend Warrington invited me. I came in with not very high expectations because I don't know. I wasn't quite sure, but since you were in it, I was like, all right, of course, I'm going to go check it out. And I was blown away. It was so well done. It was well written, super funny. You were amazing. Really incredible job. I really recommend people to go out and see this. What do you have to say about Yes Auntie?
It's a funny story behind that. Stephanie Pham, you know, and Joey, they had been asking me to do that film for actually 2 years prior to us doing it. But I didn't feel comfortable, you know, in female clothing and comedy, and you know, it's out of my comfort zone. Finally, when I read the script and I talked to Joey and I understood where he was trying to go with it, I said, you know what? I think I could possibly do this. I think this might work. So I took a chance, you know, it's basically Kung Fu Madea, you know? What I didn't realize was this particular thing, they turned it actually into a feature length film. So Warrington was very kind and introduced us to a friend of his at Digital Media Entertainment. They actually saw it and actually wanted to buy the film. And subsequently now it's on Amazon Prime, sold, and it's doing quite well. And I'm like, I'm just shocked, you know? I took a chance and out of all my films, now that one's on Amazon Prime. So yeah, and it's doing well. And so many people say, oh, when are you gonna do another one? Dave, we wanna see Kung Fu Mama come back, you know? So I actually talked to Joey Min and Stephanie about that. And it looks like once the pandemic dies down, you know, we'll start discussing, you know, taking it to the next level because everyone wants to see Auntie and Mama come back. So,
yeah. Remember, even before all this pandemic stuff hit, even you and I were talking about doing something together. And
that's still in the works once things calm down.
Hey, Bobby, thank you so much for doing this with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, brother.
Hey, man, it was great talking to you, brother.
Always, brother. Stay I love safe. You. Give my love to the wife and kids as well. Peace out.
So what did you think of today's episode? Did I do a better job than Scott Adkins in interviewing a Hong Kong action star? And who would you like to see me interview next? Let me know in the comments, and I'll see you guys next time. Word is I'm a kung fu genius. Technique speaks for me, not lineage. Forget Jet Li, cause I'm the one. Many call me Sifu, but to you I'm Seekung. And I produce masters, you surpass us. Your kung fu stiffer than corpse and caskets. City Wing Chun is the house I built. Violate the gate and your blood gets spilt. Alex Richter, always the... Alright. So what did you think of today's episode? Oh, I'm looking at the wrong place. Fucking hey, Dre. You know what's funny? Yeah. None of this is getting in there because people will not know that I mess up ever, right? Don't forget who's editing this.
I remember. Yeah.
I can destroy you in editing.
You know.
Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts.
Absolutely.